Welcome to episode one of our Menopause Deep Dive on Unfiltered, Confident and Real, the new podcast series from Syra Skin. Joining me today is Dr. Gronje, a GP and menopause specialist with extensive experience providing community NHS menopause clinics. Welcome to our podcast. I am so excited to have you, Dr. Gronje. Can you tell me a little bit more about yourself?
I am a GP and I still do GP work, and I'm also a menopause specialist.
I have been wanting to do this podcast for such a long time. At 55 years old, I've done the perimenopause. I think I'm done the menopause. I think I'm postmenopausal, but who knows? I'm sure I'll find out at some stage. But this was the number one topic that my followers on my social media platform wanted to find out about. And I find it astonishing because it's no longer really a taboo subject, because there's the celebrities are fronting the menopause. The whole industry sort of seems to, you know, is skincare, and there's vitamins and minerals, and it's all menopause focused. Mm-hmm. Yet despite all of this knowledge and information, women are still confused. So my first question to you is, what is the menopause?
Even this, I think, can cause confusion.
Yeah.
And I think particularly when you're trying to understand the difference between perimenopause and menopause. So menopause in itself is a distinct moment in time. And that's essentially when women haven't had a period for 12 months or longer. So it's nearly a retrospective diagnosis. So you would come to see me and I would be your GP, and I say, okay, if you haven't had a period for, you know, 13 months now, you're menopausal. So that's essentially when your estrogen and progesterone levels are consistently very, very low. Mm-hmm. And we say the average age of menopause in the UK is around 51. So that's when we used to talk about menopause, I think we always fixated on that.
Mm.
It was the end of periods, and that's what we based it on. We didn't really have any of this understanding or awareness about perimenopause. And I remember training as a doctor and speaking with family members and other doctors. I don't think I knew what perimenopause was until probably quite far into my training.
Mm.
And perimenopause is essentially when your hormone levels start to fluctuate.
Right.
So if you see that as the run-up to your period. So it depends, each woman is different, but that would normally be around 2 to 8 years. So what you're getting there is that your estrogen levels are fluctuating. So if you imagine your estrogen levels are starting to go up and down,
mm-hmm.
so women might notice that for several months they have really awful hot flushes, and then actually the hot flushes might improve for a few months, and then they might be noticing joint pains that come and go because these estrogen levels are just fluctuating in the background. So you're getting all of this turbulent hormonal activity, and you're getting all of these symptoms that are sometimes very, very severe and then resolve for a bit of time. And then in combination with that, your periods are starting to change.
Mm-hmm.
Women might say, I'm skipping a period.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that periods are much, much lighter. Some women will have really heavy periods that are, you know, really difficult to manage. And often as well, women will start to notice that their cycles are much shorter. So it's the combination of periods starting to change and then getting all of these symptoms that are coming and going of different severity. That's what we would see as perimenopause. And then menopause is when you haven't had that period for 12 months or longer.
Right. And I think this is fascinating, mm-hmm. because, and let's focus on the perimenopause, mm-hmm. for now, because I, as a South Asian woman, I had all the symptoms. I had the whole really hot flushes. Mm-hmm. My skin just went into overdrive, really dry, itchy, even eczema-like. Mm-hmm. Very low mood, mm-hmm. verging on depression, mm-hmm. And irritability. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was just constant. And I felt like I was okay. And then all of a sudden, but my periods were kind of on and off. They were what I experienced. And that's when somebody said to me, you need to go to your GP. Let's think about HRT. Does that sound about right? And is it normal for most women to go through the perimenopause at that age?
And what age were you when you were experiencing all of those
symptoms? I think I noticed it was around 46, 47.
Okay. That is really what we would describe as nearly textbook perimenopause.
Right.
Now, when we say average age, we need to be really careful here, because what we end up doing is we end up not actually thinking about different ethnicities and thinking about the fact that age of perimenopause and menopause does differ quite significantly. So this sort of messaging about average age of perimenopause being 47 and average age of menopause being 51 is really for white women. Okay, wow. So that's what we would say is the average age in the UK. But that means we're missing, like you said, actually South Asian women, where actually the average age of perimenopause is much younger. Wow. So by a couple of years, but that's, you know, that is significant. Mm. And what I worry about as a menopause specialist and a GP is that these women might be coming out maybe 40, 43, 44 with perimenopausal symptoms and be told, oh, you're too young. But actually, from an ethnicity perspective, they're not too young.
Wow.
So I think it's really important that we're a bit careful about averages, because they are just an average.
Yes.
And we're not unpicking the fact that there will be different experiences within different ethnicities.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard that your ethnicity can play a vital role in your menopause journey. Everybody is different.
It's messaging that we need to change. We need to make the public aware so that they know how to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
And we also need to make doctors and nurses aware so that they're picking up on this. And we also need to be aware that the symptoms that they can present with and the potential medical conditions that are associated with menopause are also different within each ethnicity.
Okay, I think that's really interesting, because I do feel that at the moment the NHS, it's a blanket approach. Mm-hmm. Oh, woman in menopause, take HRT, do this. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't seem to suit everybody.
No, I think you need to look at the individual. You need to have that time, which as someone that still works in the NHS can be really challenging. Mm-hmm. And understand what their symptoms are, and then tailor the treatment so that it's appropriate to what they're presenting with. And as an example, white women will often have a slightly longer perimenopause. White women have a slightly increased risk of osteoporosis. Mm. So perhaps in a consultation, I would have more focus on bone health in particular, and maybe protein intake.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas South Asian women, there is that increased risk of type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol.
Let's talk about the role of HRT, because again, so much confusion around this. A lot of women still out there scared to take it. Mm-hmm. They're worried that it's going to give them breast cancer. I'm on HRT. I've brought my HRT with me. I've got my Sandrina gel. Okay. I've also got my progesterone.
Perfect.
And we can talk about the roles of these. Mm-hmm. And I've also got my testosterone. So can you tell us, you know, why I feel it is important to take HRT, but for some women it may not be. So why is it important? And just tell us the role HRT plays in all of this.
So I would say to women, there's three key benefits of taking HRT. Number one, and what I would say is the most important, is your quality of life. So if you're coming to me and saying, I'm not sleeping, my mood's low, well, we want to think about how can we restore your quality of life so that you're able to live the life that you want to lead and continue to work, support family, and you know, be a happy individual. The other two benefits is that it's very good for your bone health. So estrogen maintains bone density. It reduces the risk of osteoporosis, and that's when the bones become very thin and fragile and can fracture easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also really important for your heart health.
Mm-hmm.
So postmenopausal women, their risk of heart disease increases significantly, and that's because of the loss of estrogen. The risk is actually higher than men, which often people don't realise either, because we often see heart disease as a male condition.
Mm-hmm. And when is the right time? Because you can still have irregular periods and go on HRT, because I think it's the timing thing that people are confused about.
We're becoming more dynamic about that, because I think initially, training wise, you think, oh, let's wait until their periods completely stop.
Yeah.
And that could be years of them suffering with quite significant symptoms. So when you start HRT depends on you as an individual and when you start perimenopause. You're noticing symptoms.
Yeah.
And you're noticing a change in your periods, I think that's a reasonable time to speak to your doctor about starting HRT. Yeah. Because there is a lot of evidence that from a benefit perspective, it makes more sense to start it earlier than to start it later.
I was on HRT and I'm very lucky because I think I had a female GP who recognised the symptoms. As soon as like I tried to do it the natural way, the Clary Sage it is, peppermint and all that, I'm sorry, but for me it did nothing. Mm-hmm. I think it was a couple of months I tried, but my bed sheets were soaked. You know, I couldn't sleep. I just did not feel myself. And as soon as I went on HRT, I was back. My skin was fantastic. I got my energy back. I could sleep. I've slept fantastically well throughout, actually. Mm-hmm. So I've been very lucky. But for me, it was a real lifesaver. Why do women still think it's associated with breast cancer? Because as far as I'm concerned, this, you know, the estrogen that we're getting is very nature identical. It's very different to what was given to women in the past.
Yes. And I have sympathy for women because I think a lot of the fear about breast cancer is because it's such an emotional topic. And what we had historically was early 2000s, we had that very large study, Women's Health Initiative, which came out and said, HRT is bad. It increases your risk of breast cancer. And as doctors, the message was, stop it. Now, that study was really flawed. And there's quite a few reasons for that. Number one, the majority of women in the study were in their 60s. That's a very, you know, that's an older age to be on HRT. Your risk of breast cancer will increase as you get older. The women were also taking, as you said, much older forms of HRT.
Synthetic
estrogens. And we know that synthetic estrogens and these older forms of HRT will have a higher breast cancer risk. So there were all these factors in the background. But we didn't pick that apart. We just took the headline message. What's happened in the past probably 10 years is that message has really started to change.
Yeah.
We've challenged the foundations of that research, and actually it's very much been accepted that that research was incredibly flawed. When I speak to women in consultations, my message really would be that for the vast majority of women, your benefits of taking HRT, so your quality of life, bones and heart, outweighs your breast cancer risk, particularly within the first 5 years.
And I think that brings me really nicely onto the fact that, you know, yes, HRT is there to help you improve your quality of life. But as you are aging, you have to take more responsibility for your overall health because your body demands more of you to look after itself. So things that you could do in your 20s and 30s and 40s, even early 40s, you may not be able to do that as well. Go out and have a bit too much, be able to eat the same portion of food that you did before, you know, use the same kind of makeup, etc., because your skin is changing, your hormones are changing, and you just need to be more aware of it. And I think that's one of the things that I find with, you know, talking to women, they want to keep their life as they know it. But they don't want, you know, they don't, but they don't want to change. But the body is changing.
Yeah.
So it's that mindset. And it's, that's really difficult to sort of come across sometimes. It's like you have to change because your body's changing.
And I think as women, we should be kinder to ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
We shouldn't then build this expectation of, well, I'm taking HRT, so I therefore should be able to do all these things. Because that's not actually positive female empowerment.
Yeah.
That's making women feel that they're not enough. And I think that's a bit of a tricky balance. And actually, I will see this in consultations where women come to me and say, you know, I'm on maximum dose of estrogen, my hot flushes are much better, and that's a good objective measurement that you're absorbing estrogen well. You know, my joint aches are a bit better, my mood's okay, but, you know, I don't have the energy that I want. And then you unpick what they're doing, and, you know, they're doing like Ironman training, and they're doing marathon running, and they're going to HIIT circuit training 6 times a week at 5:30. And you have to say, well, I don't think increasing the estrogen is the answer here. I think it needs to be a bit of a balance of you being a bit kinder to yourself.
And it's about reducing the cortisol, because that's the other thing. You know, if you're a fit woman, it's great to be fit, but your fitness has to change. Perhaps a little bit more relaxation, a bit more mindfulness, keep that body calm. You can't, you know, go for walks instead of loads of runs. And it is a whole lifestyle change. You can't, I feel like people just go, oh, I'm on HRT, it's fine. I can still do all the other stuff, but it's not. And I think that's where you get into problems. I really want to talk about, so we know what estrogen does. I want to talk about progesterone and testosterone as well. But before I do, I want to ask you this one question specifically on estrogen. Does HRT make you fat?
No, is the short answer. When you start HRT, you can get a little bit of bloating, and that can actually last for a few weeks. That is more likely related to the progesterone. HRT, if anything, is likely to help with your weight. And one of the main reasons for that is that if you feel better, you then have the energy to do all the lifestyle bits and pieces that you need to do in the background.
I eat healthily, I work out, etc. And I think a lot of women will be able to relate to this. Am I just eating too much? And I eat well. Are you saying that look, it's not the HRT that's making you fat, it's perhaps the nutrition? Like, is that a big part of, you know, menopause as well? Is like you need nutritional advice as well as just the hormonal advice?
I think you absolutely do need nutritional advice. Now, there's also, it sounds like you're doing all the right things.
Doing so all the right things. So that's why I've got a wide waist.
That's why I think it's important that we're also kind about it. So I don't just turn around and say, eat more protein. And you think, I can't eat any more protein. Life's a balancing act. And you know, if you want to go on holiday and go out for a few meals, of course you should. Average weight increase is around 2 to 5 kilos. We know that women who have a higher BMI over 30, that weight increase can be more accelerated and more challenging. One of the reasons we think that it's happening is that essentially younger women store their fat more peripherally, so sort of arms and legs. And as women get older, they store their fat more centrally. It's actually just telling women that they're not going mad. We don't want women to be in a scenario where they're barely eating at all. So I think it's important that we provide the nutrition advice, and that is often done. You know, we can't do everything in a menopause consultation. So actually being able to signpost women to seeing a nutritionist,
yes,
to actually finding the right type of cookbook, and to thinking about, right, I do need to reduce my carbohydrates. I can't eat the carbs that I ate in my 30s.
I think this is where you have to go a little bit mindful and go, look, are you eating healthily? Are your hormones balanced? Are you sleeping well? Because if you're doing all of those and you're exercising 2 or 3 times and stuff, you're doing the right thing.
Absolutely.
And that's your body shape. And don't get hung up, because we live in a society where we are comparing ourselves and women are just talking about their weight the whole time, but not in relation to health, but very much a physical, I need to look like this because otherwise I don't feel like I'm successful or actually beautiful, or, you know, I'm doing something wrong.
I agree. I think as women, we are very hard on ourselves. And I think the expectation we put on ourselves is very high.
Yeah.
I also think that kind of 90s culture of exercising to be thin, not exercising to be strong, has been very toxic and is still there in the back of women's minds.
It's so, in the back of my mind.
Yeah. And
still
actually,
in the back of my mind.
We don't want women in their 50s and 60s and 70s really thin. It's not good for their bones.
That's right.
It's not good for their reserve.
You need the nutrition.
Absolutely. It's not a sign of health to be incredibly thin. It's really important, actually, that we change that mindset. And I've noticed it, you know, when I speak to my mum as an example and say, oh, I lift weights at the gym. And she goes, oh, don't lift weights, you'll get big shoulders. Trying to change that psyche.
Yeah.
And I see younger women at the gym in their 20s who are very confident with how they use all the weight equipment and look so strong and healthy. And I think, right, the messaging I think is changing, but I think it's still a battle in the menopause world. And I think we have to be careful that menopause awareness has been so fantastic and positive, but we don't want it to develop into then women feeling like the goal is to never age.
I think for me it was like, look, you've just got, you just, I know I'm overeating, you know, like I'm eating a bit too much of the naughty stuff and I just can't do it now, but I am eating. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm eating and it shows in my skin, it shows in my hair, shows in my nails. And I think I do see women who are really restricting. Mm-hmm. They may have a size 8 figure, but I can see in their skin it's not there. And it's because they're not eating. Mm-hmm. And there's a big role of nutrition mm-hmm. and hormone balance as well as feeling good about yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, that food is part of that, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a big part of how we socialize and our culture and our family life. So we have to be careful as women that we can still live and enjoy ourselves.
Absolutely.
I think
right.
That's really important.
Let's just talk about estrogen. So I have these gels. They come in gel format mainly. Is that correct? Or the estrogen?
So estrogen comes in a couple of different types of preparation. So if you ever hear someone talking about transdermal estrogen, that's estrogen that's absorbed directly through the skin into the bloodstream. So that's your Sandrina gel.
Yes.
And that's also Estrogel as a bottle, which is a different type of estrogen gel, just in terms of how they're packaged. An estrogen patch or an estrogen spray.
Right.
So that's your transdermal estrogen. So you've got the options as a woman of two different types of gel, spray or patch. And then the other way that we can prescribe estrogen is orally as a tablet.
Right. And in terms of what you start on, mm-hmm. how often do you need to be checked to make sure that your levels are being maintained? Because how much of this can you take? As I'm on 1 milligram. Mm-hmm. I started off on 0.5 in my perimenopause mm-hmm. and then I went up to 1 because I noticed a massive dip mm-hmm. again in those mm-hmm. sort of mood swings and things. And my hormone therapist said, you need to go up to the next level now.
It's tricky in some ways to talk about a maximum dose because each woman is different. And sometimes we have scenarios as well of women going through a very early menopause, so before the age of 40. And those women will often be prescribed above licensed doses of estrogen
right.
because actually they've lost their estrogen very early. Mm. And in terms of managing their symptoms and reducing bone disease and heart disease, we sometimes a little bit more proactive. So each woman is different. Mm. What I would say is that there is guidelines regarding what would be seen as the top licensed dose, which as an example for Sandrina would be 2 milligrams of gel. Okay, so what I would describe your dose as is an average dose, where lots of women will actually say at that dose, this has managed my menopausal symptoms nicely. This has done a really good job. As I said, an objective measure of seeing if you're noticing an improvement is hot flushes.
Yes.
And that's a really nice way of actually seeing the change.
Yeah.
Once you're settled on a dose, as in, you know, bleeding pattern is either, you know, not present whatsoever or is nice and regular, and you're feeling that you're in the right place and the doctor's happy that the prescription is appropriate, it's really up to each individual
yeah.
how often they want to be reviewed. From an NHS perspective, really 6 to 12 months would be reasonable
okay.
unless anything changes. Some women might want more regular follow-up. They might have some worries about some of their symptoms. And I think it's just adapting to that.
Just to add to that, having gone through that experience, is that, you know, it does take a while for hormones to be balanced. So, you know, you may not get any spotting, then you might get a bit of spotting, and then it might be spotting and it's annoying. And, you know, it's just that balance. But again, it's like, don't hold that in yourself. Like, I had a bit of spotting. Mm-hmm. I went to my NHS gynae department. They just wanted to check the lining around, is the uterus, isn't it?
Perfect.
To make sure it wasn't too thick. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely fine. And that was, you know, job done. But I think spotting I don't want to go into it too much, but it's normal and it's just about talking to your GP and making sure that you give time for things to balance out.
And what I would always say about spotting is that when you start HRT, most women will have some spotting in the first 3 to 4 months.
Mm.
And that's why when we start HRT, we should follow you up at the 3 month mark, whether that's private or NHS.
Mm.
If the spotting is ongoing at that stage or the bleeding pattern is very erratic and it's more frequent bleeding than you would expect, then at that stage, your doctor might change your progesterone. They may increase the dose. They may alter the progesterone. So I would always say to women, it's the 3 month mark where we need to review things. I don't want women suffering and waiting for 3 months if they're actually having really heavy bleeding.
That's right.
Because, you know, they'll develop anemia, they'll feel awful. So by all means, if it's difficult to manage and you know it's not normal, come back earlier. Yeah. And then the other message that I'm always keen to say to women is, if you've been on your HRT for some time and your symptoms are settled and you're either having no bleeding or that light monthly regular bleed, and then your bleeding pattern changes and it doesn't make sense, you should also come back.
Okay.
So really the message is, if it doesn't make sense to you and you're a bit worried about it, just come back.
And it's annoying you and it's disturbing your quality of
because
life.
Because we might need to do a scan, we might need to look at the cervix, we might need to check that your smear's up to date. And it's easy for us to do these things. Yeah. So any concerns about your bleeding, we should be able to adapt and look into that.
Brilliant. So let's talk about progesterone. What does the role of progesterone have in the menopause?
So really the progesterone is prescribed to maintain the lining of the womb.
Right.
Okay, so it's to keep the lining of the womb nice and thin. So if I had prescribed Sandrina to you on its own, the lining of your womb would have got progressively bulkier and thicker, and you would have started to develop really quite erratic and heavy bleeding.
Right.
And you would have been very annoyed with me.
Yeah.
So that's why we prescribe the progesterone. So as an example, most women who've had a hysterectomy, so their womb removed, don't need a progesterone.
Right.
Okay. There's always caveats in medicine, yes. But that's the general message. Really, one of the benefits of progesterone, and it's a sort of additional benefit, really. It's not the main reason we're prescribing it. And it depends on the progesterone that we're prescribing. But this progesterone, which is micronized progesterone, and is the most common progesterone that we tend to prescribe, has a really lovely effect that it helps with sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that, where you get that anti-anxiety sedative effect, which is why we say to take it at night. So what it tends to help with is it helps with prolonged sleep, so having that better quality sleep.
I sleep like a baby.
Right.
And I don't know if it's down to this, but I sleep really well.
Okay, yeah. you're very lucky.
But perhaps this helps, and I don't, perhaps it's because of this, I don't know.
I think it probably does help, particularly
absolutely.
To describe yourself as sleeping like a baby is quite...
I sleep really well.
Yeah, it's really positive.
And it's interesting because when I say this to women my age, they're like, what do you mean you sleep well? I sleep like a baby, you know, and it really does help
me,
great.
I think this is probably helping. Not all women will get the sleep benefit, but I would say the majority of women I speak to find that really helpful.
Yeah, and now you can also take this as a Mirena coil.
You're right, there's different ways of prescribing progesterone.
Because that coil just goes to the certain area.
Exactly, so you've got your tablet forms and you've got a couple of different types of progesterone tablets that we can prescribe, and then the other way that we can deliver progesterone is the Mirena coil.
Yeah.
So that's inserted and sits within the womb and locally releases progesterone.
Okay.
And that's licensed for sort of 4 to 5 years as part of your HRT.
And why would you go on to that and not stick with the tablets?
Part of it is individual preference.
Right.
Some women find it really hard to remember to take tablets. Some women will get some indigestion and reflux with those tablets. And if that persists and it's making them feel quite nauseous. Some women have really heavy, painful periods, particularly, you know, in that kind of peak perimenopause. So women who perhaps have adenomyosis, which is where there's inflammation and thickening within the womb, endometriosis, and very difficult to manage bleeding, often the progesterone tablets don't quite manage that bleeding as well as we'd like to. So we would think about the Mirena coil.
Okay.
You've also got the contraception benefit, and if you're perimenopausal, you can still get pregnant. So there's a choice element, but if I'm speaking to women and bleeding pattern is really challenging and pain is really challenging, I'd be quite keen to proactively anticipate that and discuss the Mirena earlier rather than letting them sort of keep going and give it several months and then be coming back to me and then considering the Mirena at a later stage.
Let's get to the quality of life quicker if
exactly.
we can, you know. And then finally, testosterone. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I even need this, but I've taken it. I think I've got still quite a lot of natural energy in me and libido's fine, but apparently my testosterone was a little bit down, so they just prescribed it. But
Okay. How long have you been taking it for?
Probably about 2 months.
2 months.
2-3 months.
It's hard to really see in 2 to 3 months whether testosterone replacement has helped libido. The reason for that is libido takes a long time to see a difference. And as you said, it doesn't sound like that was your primary concern in terms of symptoms. The reason for prescribing testosterone, the kind of clear indication, is for low libido. Okay, so that's why we should be prescribing it.
Right.
There is some anecdotal evidence that it may help in terms of brain fog and energy levels, but that's really an evolving space and we don't really have that research to definitively say that at this moment in time. So there's different types of testosterone that we can prescribe. The one that you're holding is only available on private prescription.
That's right.
Okay, so that's imported from Australia. We don't have a female preparation of testosterone available in the UK yet. So we're prescribing male testosterone and calibrating the dose for women. Okay, so that's what we're doing at the moment. And I would always say to women that what we should do in terms of when we're thinking about testosterone is optimize your estrogen first. Get your estrogen where we want it to be, get those symptoms settled, and then consider testosterone.
Can I stay on my HRT for life?
That is very much an individual discussion with your specialist. But we do have women that do continue HRT long term. And really, it's that balance of quality of life and also looking at those other benefits in terms of your heart and your bone. So this older message of needing to stop HRT after a couple of years, that's definitely being challenged. And I would be really receptive to having that discussion with women and listening to what they want and continuing HRT on that sort of balanced discussion where they're informed of the benefits, they're informed of the risks, and we can make that plan together.
If I'm on HRT, but I'm still getting the brain fog and I'm still getting the achy joints and I'm still finding it difficult to sleep, what else do I need to do to improve my quality of life outside of lifestyle?
First off, we should look at your HRT. Is it the right type of HRT for you? Do we need to change the estrogen to a different preparation? Some women absorb gel much better than the patch and vice versa. So I think someone needs to go back to basics and think what is going on with your HRT. Then there's also that component as well that we don't base everything on medication and we think about what else could be driving some of these symptoms, particularly poor sleep, low mood and brain fog. And women who come to see me and see menopause specialists are often juggling an awful lot and life is complicated and challenging. And that's where often actually thinking about counselling can be really helpful and having that CBT, because it's not just all about your medication.
What about other supplements? What key supplements do you think we need alongside HRT?
The supplement industry has got very complicated. And I think that's causing probably a lot of anxiety for women. I would say to women, take a vitamin D supplement, so around sort of 400 to 800 units daily, and take that throughout the year. Otherwise, I really think it's actually looking at your diet that's more important than taking supplements.
You work on the Voi Menopause platform. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Voi Menopause is a menopause service for women, which we want to make as accessible as possible. We know that women find navigating lots of different doctors, waiting for appointments, really stressful. So what we've created is a subscription service whereby you can see your specialist, you can have that really high quality 45 minute consultation where we really focus on you and we talk about medications and we prescribe your medications, and then you can have ongoing follow up with us as well. So what we've got within the Voi platform is the fact that you can have check-ins with your clinician, and that's complimentary as part of the subscription. So if you are a bit worried about breakthrough bleeding or symptom response, absolutely send an email in and we'll speak with you earlier, and that's not a problem. We've also got nutritionists that are part of the service. Again, that's complimentary within the subscription. They're able to speak to you about your diet in much more detail and actually look at those lifestyle changes that can really actually make a difference to your symptoms. And we've also got services such as CBT, because we know how difficult it is for women to access good quality, affordable CBT. And our therapists understand menopause, they have that background experience, they're part of our team, so you're not starting from scratch. You're not starting your whole story again. So that's the premise really of why we created VoiMenopause. We wanted to create a very affordable healthcare menopause provider that women know that they can have continuity with. They know that they can come back to us, and they know that they're also getting that specialised care.
A big thank you to Dr. Gronje for joining us today. If you'd like to join the conversation, please send us an email, comment or question to info@saraskin.co.uk. Please remember to hit the subscribe button for future episodes. And if you'd like to find out more about the topics we've discussed today, please visit the links in the description.